We may move to the second case this morning, N. Ray Holly Marine Towing.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the Court. The lower court erred in this case in failing to apply the Bankruptcy Code's longstanding rule of priorities to a settlement agreement entered into between the estate, the debtor's principal, and a law firm who sought to collect its attorney's fees outside the ordinary course. In promulgating the Code, however, Congress made it remarkably clear that, quote, in a bankruptcy case, fees are not a matter for private agreement. There is inherent a public interest that must be considered in awarding fees. This, Your Honors, is a case in which Bauck and Michaels have sought to circumvent Congress's intentions, not to mention the Code's rule of priorities, in trying to obtain its attorney's fees in connection with this bankruptcy case. I hope to present this honorable panel with three distinct arguments today. First, that the Bankruptcy Court's 9019 order, as approved, violated the rule of priorities because Bauck was paid its fees while Schuller and other administrative claimants were not. Second, the settlement was not and cannot be in the best interest of the estate because no settlement is fair and equitable where it seeks to avoid the contours of the priority scheme. And third, Your Honors, I will explain why the funds provided to Bauck and Michaels were property of the estate. But before I do that, I would like to briefly address the standing issue raised by Bauck and the trustee here on appeal. Neither Bauck nor the trustee have cross-appealed this issue, which may violate the Seventh Circuit laws, such as in Re Ray, where the court found that bankruptcy standing arguments could be waived as opposed to Article III standing. However, as that case notes, if the court would like to consider standing on its own accord, it's certainly obviously allowed to do so. And if it does wish to entertain that argument, I would submit that the district court's ruling should stand, namely that Schuller has standing to bring this appeal. Indeed, Schuller has a stake in the manner in which this estate is liquidated. As the district court correctly pointed out, Your Honors, Schuller has a pecuniary interest in how the assets of the estate are distributed, and this, Your Honors, is enough to confer standing upon it. Simply put, if Bauck and Michael's proceeds are disgorged and redistributed pro rata, as Schuller suggests, Schuller will benefit from that distribution. Now on to the three substantive arguments that I referenced earlier. Because Bauck and Michaels was paid its fees out of estate funds, the priority scheme applies. Both Bauck and my client Schuller are administrative claimants who have had their fee applications approved by the bankruptcy court. However, because the Chapter 11 case was converted to a Chapter 7 case, and because there are currently insufficient funds to pay both Bauck and Schuller's fees in full, their fees must be shared pro rata with all administrative claimants. Therefore, the rule of priorities was not followed in this case because Bauck and Michaels was paid in full, but Schuller and others were not.
But what was the source of the payment?
The source of the payment to the law firm was part of a settlement between the debtor's principals and the estate.
But didn't it involve property that was separate from the estate?
Well, Your Honors, it's Schuller's position that the funds that were provided to Bauck and Michaels were property of the estate. The estate funds were used to compensate Bauck.
Were they proceeds from the sale of the real estate?
They were.
And I thought the real estate was outside the estate in the first place. It was owned by, what's his name? And therefore was not part of the business. The business didn't own that under the Chapter 11 or in the liquidation.
Well, the property was sold, and the funds were then being held by the estate. The estate had a claim to the proceeds of the sale as well as the debtor's principals. So they struck a settlement deal in which the estate retained some of the funds and then settled the claims for breach of fiduciary duty and other claims with the debtor's principals.
So you're attacking the settlement agreement itself then?
Excuse me, Judge?
The settlement agreement itself, you say, is invalid.
Yes. I feel that the settlement agreement itself was not fair and equitable in that it violated the rule of priorities. If you look at the December 30, 2009 order itself, it specifically states that proceeds to the estate from the sale of the property totaled $911,620.40. If the unambiguous language of the order were not enough, what the trustee is arguing is that the money never became property of the estate because it was being held in escrow. However, districts in this circuit have held that the simple fact that, that funds are being held in escrow does not divest the estate of a property interest in these funds. Moreover, the U.S. Supreme Court in the Whiting case has noted that the scope of property of the estate is extremely broad. And the Seventh Circuit has followed up in Yonica's case, holding that the property is within the estate has been construed most generously, and an interest is not outside its reach just because it's novel or contingent or because its enjoyment must be postponed. Well, and the Seventh Circuit went on to say, in fact, every conceivable interest of the debtor, future, non-possessory, contingent, speculative, derivative, is within the reach of Section 541 and is property of the estate. Well, if you look at the trustee's brief, Your Honor, you will see that they acknowledged that the proceeds were, quote-unquote, contingent. And it's our position that, according to the code under Yonicus, contingent interests constitute assets of the estate. Now, I do understand, I think another point you may have been getting at is that the trustee and Buck and Michaels have argued that there was some private assignment of funds here between from the debtor's principals to the law firm. And as I stated at the outset, as I'll explain, as the court had said in the Second Circuit case of Motorola, any attempt to use settlement as a means to avoid the priority scheme is simply inappropriate. Attorney's fees are simply not a private matter in bankruptcy law. And so the fact that this settlement was presented to the court for approval, it's our position that there was no way that that's a private assignment. If it was a private assignment, what was the need to get the bankruptcy court's blessing on the compromise? Your Honor, both the lower court and Bach and Michaels and the trustee have also claimed that even if we move away from the rule of priorities for a second, that the settlement agreement as approved was in the best interest of the estate. Well, whether a settlement's distribution scheme complies with the code's priority scheme is the most important factor for a bankruptcy court to consider when determining if a settlement is fair and equitable to begin with. As the Second Circuit stated in Motorola, whether a settlement's distribution plan complies with the code's priority scheme is often a dispositive factor in the approval process. And in our case, Golden Bear, cited in our brief, stands for the same proposition, namely that a settlement cannot be in the best interest of the estate if it violates the rule of priorities. Notwithstanding these arguments, Schooler submits that the likely outcome of litigating the claims between Ms. Headland, Mr. Dawson, and the estate is that, and the trustee, is that the estate, not the law firm, Bach and Michaels, would receive a net recovery. Accordingly, it's our position that the 9019 order is flawed because it approves funds to Bach outside the ordinary course. Finally, Your Honor, you have the opportunity today and in the weeks to come in this case to decide an issue that will affect bankruptcy attorneys and litigants alike on this issue. And I would submit that this court should consider the potentially harrowing policy that would be implemented if the district court's decision be upheld. Potentially, any creditor could object to a proposal like this, as Bach and Michaels did, and obtain its attorney's fees outside the ordinary course. Any court could approve a settlement that arbitrarily provides attorney's fees to some claimants and not others by hiding behind this private agreement rubric. Indeed, Your Honors, what good is the rule of priorities if it can be so easily circumvented? And what good is the ordinary course if it can be so easily disregarded? If you don't have any other further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Judge.
May it please the Court. The trustee is here to defend a settlement that brought $458,000 into this bankruptcy estate, some of which will eventually go to the IRS, which holds a secured claim that is deemed allowed because nobody, including appellant Schooler, has objected to it, and which secured claim is entitled to payment ahead of Schooler's Chapter 11 administrative claim. None of the proceeds will go to Chapter 11 administrative claimants such as Schooler. The trustee settled a contentious dispute with the debtor's owner, Glenn Dawson, his estranged wife, Holly Headland, over who was entitled to proceeds from the sale of the property where the debtor operated its business. Dawson, not the estate, owned the real estate. Hedlund claimed an interest in the property as a result of her ongoing divorce proceedings with Dawson. The trustee claimed an equitable interest in the property on the basis that Dawson had usurped a corporate opportunity from the debtor by purchasing the property individually. The trustee, Dawson, and Hedlund agreed to split the proceeds with one half to go to the estate and a quarter to go to Dawson and Hedlund each. The settlement allowed Dawson and Hedlund to finalize their divorce.
Now, in the 50% that the estate got an interest in, it was because of the lost opportunity, or this was something that happened, was it in anticipation of the bankruptcy, or had this happened really early on? I'm talking about the ownership of the property and what's his name, Dawson.
Are you asking why Dawson ended up with the property?
No, I want to know why, how that, because he's challenging the settlement agreement, and I'm just trying to figure out how that worked out, that it was, what's his name, Dawson?
Dawson.
Yeah, he owned the property, the real estate where the business was operating. I guess he was getting paid rent or something.
Yes, he owned
the... And for how long? Was this a long time, or is this something they did in anticipation that maybe took something away from the company? Why did the trust get half of it?
The trustee had a claim against Dawson for several reasons. One was that Dawson was acting as a pseudo officer of the debtor. He was a de facto manager of the debtor and engineered a deal where he didn't have to put up any cash but ended up owning this property that was valuable to the debtor. That happened before the bankruptcy, and then before the trustee was appointed, the debtor brought two lawsuits against Dawson, one for this corporate usurpation and breach of fiduciary duty theory, seeking constructive trust and other equitable remedies to bring the property into the estate, and then a second lawsuit that was alleging certain fraudulent transfers and other causes of action that were unrelated to the property. And by this settlement, the trustee was able to settle all claims among the trustee, Dawson, and Hedlund, and received half of the proceeds from the sale of the property.
And then that was approved by the bankruptcy court, I presume.
Yes, Your Honor. And a key point here is that the trustee negotiated for half of the proceeds from the sale of the property. And even after the assignment by Dawson and Hedlund of their proceeds to the Bach and Michaels law firm, that's exactly what the trustee ended up receiving. The trustee was economically unaffected by that assignment. And Schuller has never disputed that the trustee's $458,000 bargain with Dawson and Hedlund was a good deal for the estate. Rather, Schuller objects to the settlement solely on grounds that Hedlund and Dawson assigned part of their settlement proceeds to Bach, who was the law firm during the debtor's failed Chapter 11 case.
And all of that came from their half, then?
Yes, Your Honor. It came from their half. So it's actually twice removed from the estate. One, the way that these proceeds came into the estate in the first place was that Dawson, Hedlund, and the trustee entered into an agreement which was signed off on by both the Dawson-Hedlund Divorce Court and the Bankruptcy Court, allowing the trustee to sell the proceeds through the Bankruptcy Court and then hold on to those proceeds in a separate segregated trust, like an escrowee, until the Bankruptcy Court made a determination as to what interest, if any, the estate had in the proceeds. However, they ended up not having to litigate that because they came to the settlement. So the source of funds was not the estate. It was this segregated account being held like an escrow by the trustee. So for that reason, these funds were not estate funds. The second reason they're not estate funds is because the payment was an assignment by Dawson and Hedlund to Bach. Even if these had been estate funds, which they were not, once they leave the estate and go into the hands of Dawson and Hedlund, they are free to do with those funds whatever they want. In this case, for whatever reason, they chose to assign those funds to Bach. And so for those two reasons, nothing about the payment to Bach affected the estate's finances or implicated Section 726 of the Bankruptcy Code, is what Schuler primarily relies on in its objection.
Your attorneys apparently relinquished some of their interest in those funds as well, I guess, didn't they?
Yes. So I've been describing it as assignment by Dawson and Hedlund. However, Dawson and Hedlund had both previously agreed to assign a portion of their proceeds out of this settlement to their respective personal attorneys.
In her case, all of it, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. Hedlund had agreed to assign all of her proceeds to her counsel, Mitchell. So this was assignment that involved four parties, and it involved Hedlund, Dawson, and their two respective attorneys. Those four parties agreed to take their personal non-estate assets and assign them to Bach. And it didn't change the amount of money that the trustee ended up at the end of the day. And because Schuler has already represented that it does not object to the $458,000 part of the deal. Schuler did not object when it was served notice of the settlement and said that it had no objection to the terms of the settlement, which had $458,000 going to the trustee. I believe that undermines Schuler's argument in its brief that this deal was not in the best interest of the estate. The bankruptcy court and the district court correctly rejected Schuler's objections to the settlement for at least three reasons. First, the payment was not made from estate funds and therefore did not implicate the bankruptcy code or, as the bankruptcy court put it, otherwise affect the administration of the estate. Second, the facts of the case firmly established the bankruptcy court correctly found that the settlement was in the estate's best interests. And third, the bankruptcy court correctly found that Schuler lacked standing to challenge Dawson and Hedlund's payment to Bach on grounds that the transfer was of Dawson and Hedlund's own money, so that it had no pecuniary effect on Schuler. Schuler, during its argument, had argued that this case should not be decided on standing grounds. However, Schuler focused on only one of the two standing arguments that the trustee advanced in his briefs. The standing argument the bankruptcy court seized on and that the district court, I don't believe, reached or commented upon was that there's no standing for Schuler here because it was an assignment of Dawson and Hedlund's property to Bach, so that if it was undone, the funds would return to Dawson and Hedlund, not the estate. If the funds return to Dawson and Hedlund, the estate's interest isn't affected at all, and it cannot possibly affect what distribution that Schuler could receive out of the estate. As to the second standing argument, I acknowledge that the facts that the trustee relies upon in its second standing argument were not well developed before the district court. However, I ask this court to take judicial notice that the IRS has a very large secured claim that due to the way the priority scheme is modified by Section 724 of the Bankruptcy Court, will get paid before Schuler is paid. Because the IRS's claim is so large, no proceeds will reach Schuler's level, even if Schuler's relief is granted. For these reasons, the Bankruptcy Court did not err in approving the settlement, let alone commit clear error or abuse its discretion, which is what would be required for reversal. Therefore, this court should affirm the Bankruptcy Court and the District Court's orders. Unless there are further questions, I will sit down.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Please, the court, Paul Bach for Bach and Michaels. Your Honor, I'm here in the unusual position of being the advocate and the client today, but I just wanted to briefly highlight some of the points the trustee made and to direct the court's attention to our brief, which really laid out the financial condition of this estate from day one, and not to make the pun, but essentially this marine company was underwater financially from day one. Every asset was over-encumbered. The only way that administrative creditors got paid, the only way this company operated was through a series of cash collateral orders, essentially where the two major secured creditors, an Assignee, a Fifth Third Bank, and the IRS consented to pay our fees, consented to pay the fees of the brokers that were involved in selling the assets of the company, and consented to pay, to an extent, the fees of the committee and Schuller. And we point that out in the brief, and one of the issues we also pointed out in the brief was that in connection with this plan and agreement, there was a specific representation made in connection with Schuller's employment that they were going to be paid from a carve-out. And we discussed carve-outs in the brief, which are in over-encumbered cases in bankruptcy where professional fees otherwise could not be charged to secured creditors. Professionals won't work those cases, Your Honor. So banks who see an interest and finance companies who see an interest in using the Chapter 11 process, as they did here, for an efficient disposition of the assets, actually agree to pay those fees and do that under orders. We had such an agreement here. There was an agreement to pay Schuller. In fact, we advanced, the bankruptcy state paid their counsel over $70,000, to which that counsel agreed that they would pay them. They just simply didn't do it. And that's one of the issues, again, why we think they really don't have standing here, because they've been paid. The fact that they're the person they had an agreement with and hired them doesn't want to pay them, we think the remedy lies with a suit against that person, not with the bankruptcy estate. I did want to address and highlight one standing issue, Your Honors, and again, it's addressed in our brief, and the trustee just highlighted on it, which is the question of, do they have a pecuniary interest here? And they simply don't. If this settlement would have proved as originally proposed by the trustee, Schuller would have received no payment at all. And the reason for that is because there's only about $400,000 left in this estate. When the case was converted during the Chapter 11 phase, we had completed the sale of all the assets and distributed almost all those proceeds to the secured creditors. There was a few follow-up distributions that occurred under the trustee's supervision, but the only asset left in the Chapter 7 estate were these two claims, which the court had asked questions about, usurpation of corporate opportunity and fraudulent transfer claims. Those were settled by the trustee. That's what created this fund. That was the only asset left in the estate. And what you have now is still a large IRS claim in excess of $500,000. We have the administrative expenses of the Chapter 7, which include all the trustees' fees, which are going to include all the expenses of this appeal, which has now delayed this case by over 2 years, and that is going to more than exhaust what's left in this estate. So there simply will be no distributions to them, even if the courts were to reverse. The other consequence of reversal would be we would reverse the settlement. That would reinstate my objection. We would then have to recover all the funds back to the estate. Now, whether that could be accomplished, it certainly wouldn't be easy, but that also raises equitable mootness as to whether or not, at this point, since they never got a stay of the settlement, whether you could even unwind this. Finally, Your Honor, I just wanted to comment on what happened in the case below and the way the professionals were paid, which is really a response to the market. As I noted before, the secured creditors in this case thought there was a benefit to using Chapter 11 to sell the assets. There was. We achieved a sale under rather difficult circumstances. We actually had two auctions because after the first auction, the purchaser actually died before closing, and we did not effectuate that sale. We had another auction. We were successful in selling these assets to about three or four different parties in the marine industry. We secured a rather high price, far more than liquidation value, and that was the benefit that the IRS and the secured creditors saw, which is why they allowed their money, which is their collateral, not was no unencumbered assets, to be used to pay our fees and the fees of the people who they thought gave value to the estate. They didn't perceive value in Schuller's contribution because Schuller was hired by the Unsecured Creditors Committee. The Unsecured Creditors Committee had no real interest in the case. There was never going to be a distribution on secured creditors. In fact, there's still another $1 million priority IRS claim against this estate, which probably won't get paid, which would, again, have to be paid before unsecured creditors. So, in sum, Your Honors, the Bankruptcy Court acted correctly here. There's no standing for them, and we would just reaffirm the trustee's argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. You have 6 minutes.
Again, may it please the Court. I'll try to take the arguments made by the trustee and Bloch in the order that they were presented, hopefully. First, the trustee and Mr. Bloch make much ado of this IRS claim. Now, they're making this argument for the first time on appeal, claiming that Schuller has no pecuniary interest in the outcome of this appeal because the IRS has this relatively large secured claim. First of all, that argument Schooler's position, that argument's been waived because it was not made in the lower court. But if this court decides to consider that contention, it should recognize that the amount of the IRS claim, I believe, has not yet been allowed, nor has the priority of that claim been determined. It's worth noting that the claim, if and when allowed, has not may be objected to by any number of parties and entities. In other words, no final determinations have been made that would guarantee that Schooler would receive nothing should disgorgement be ordered by this court. Secondly, Your Honors, the trustee said that Mr. Dawson and Ms. Hedlund could do whatever they want with their fees. With their portion of the settlement, and that's simply not true. They were not permitted to provide attorney's fees to Mr. Bach and then and have that be part of the settlement agreement, which it was. That settlement agreement was then proposed and proposed to the bankruptcy court for approval. And because Mr. Bach was carved into that settlement agreement, the agreement was not in the best interest of the estate because that distribution to one administrative claimant and not others violates, it renders the agreement not in the best interest of the estate under the Motorola case.
Did it diminish the estate in any way?
It very well may have. That $65,000 could have been, the bankruptcy court could have realized that $65,000 was not necessary to complete the settlement, could have brought that $65,000 back into the estate and distributed pro rata to the other administrative claimants.
So go back to the settlement agreement then.
Yeah, you know, yes.
You'd be backing into that and, I guess, rescinding the settlement agreement.
I don't think you'd necessarily be rescinding the settlement agreement, Judge. I think
we'd have to readjust it, certainly.
You would have to readjust it.
Whatever you want to call it. Then.
Right, exactly. And next, Your Honor, I think the district court was correct in their ruling regarding standing. As they correctly noted, Schooler has a pecuniary interest in how the assets of the estate are distributed for the reasons that we've been talking about this morning. If disgorgement is ordered, it is certainly possible that Schooler will get paid at least a portion of its fees. And again, Schooler is not advocating that Mr. Bach not be paid for the work that he did. We're just advocating that, consistent with the rule of priorities in the ordinary course, he be paid a pro rata share along with other administrative claimants. Next, Your Honor, Mr. Bach raised in the lower court and here again on appeal, again without a cross appealing the issue, that there was a representation made by the committee that my client would be paid pursuant to a carve out. However, as Judge Kendall noted below, nothing. There was a fee application. My clients filed a fee application that was approved. Nothing in that order binds my client to being paid from that payment source, and nothing that my client has done has somehow waived its right to collect its fees under the ordinary course and in a pro rata manner under the rule of priorities.
How much is your client claiming at this point?
The amount of money?
Mm-hmm.
It's I believe it's about $25,000. And, Your Honor, another thing that you had mentioned previously was that are we seeking to undo the settlement agreement? I think we touched on that a minute ago. We are simply seeking that the funds provided to Bach and Michaels be disgorged and distributed pro rata. I don't think that necessitates the entire agreement to be undone or funds to be recovered from some other source that's already been distributed. I don't think a stay of the settlement agreement was necessarily mandatory in order to get the relief we're looking for. It's pretty narrow relief we're seeking.
Well, yeah, but if you disgorge it, doesn't it go back to the people it came from?
It would go back to the estate. We would
submit
that.
Well, not the estate. That's my point. If you say they don't get it,
right,
because that isn't fair or whatever,
right,
then it goes back to the attorneys and the, what's their name, the husband and wife, ex-husband. That's where it came from, at least the way I understand it. You're saying it shouldn't have been that way in the first place.
Correct.
So it goes back to the settlement agreement again and saying that wasn't...
What we're saying, Judge, is that the bankruptcy court could have, at that point even, if it disapproved that portion of the agreement, could have disgorged...
And so they wouldn't have gotten paid.
Right.
Or whatever it is.
Right.
And so then it's fair because neither of you get paid.
Well, it's our position that the money would go back into the estate and be distributed pro rata.
Okay.
That's our position. And lastly, Your Honor, none of this should really come as much of a surprise to anybody. If you look at page 9 of the trustee's brief, where there's a portion of the transcript from Mr. Dawson's counsel, he says, you know, we have agreed that of the fees that were to be paid to our firm, and I hope you can see the chagrin on my face, Your Honor, but we've agreed that we will contribute $10,000 of our fees to Mr. Bach's fees. Mr. Bach will take the responsibility and any risks of any third parties having a problem with him getting these fees. That's not part of the deal. So it's our position, Your Honor, this is not a surprise. This distribution was made outside the ordinary course, violated the rule of priorities. I see my time is up. I'm sorry.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to all counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. And before we take the third case, the court will take a brief recess.